Chapter 5. The naked corpse of an adult black woman lay stretched on an examining table under the glaring lights of the autopsy room. Preservation was excellent. No visible injuries due to violence. To the trained eye, the state of rigor mortis indicated she had been dead less than 7 hours. Her age appeared to be somewhere between 25 and 30. The body might have drawn male stares once, but now it lay undernourished, wasted, and ravaged by a decade of drug intake. The Dade County coroner, Dr. Calvin Rooney, wasn't too pleased about doing the autopsy. There were enough deaths in Miami to keep his staff working around the clock, and he preferred to spend his time on the more dramatic and puzzling post-mortem examinations. A garden-variety drug overdose held little interest for him. But this one was found dumped on a county commissioner's front lawn, and it wouldn't do to send in a third-string quarterback. Wearing a blue lab coat because he detested the standard white issue, Rooney, a homegrown Floridian, U.S. Army veteran, and Harvard Medical School graduate, slipped a new cassette in a portable tape recorder and dryly commented on the general condition of the body. He picked up a scalpel and bent over for the dissection, starting a few inches under the chin and slicing downward toward the pubic bone. Suddenly, Rooney halted the incision over the chest cavity and leaned closer, squinting through a pair of wide-lensed, horn-rimmed glasses. In the next 15 minutes, he removed and examined the heart while delivering a running monologue into the tape recorder. Rooney was in the midst of making a last-minute observation when Sheriff Tyler Sweat entered the autopsy room. He was a medium-built, brooding man, slightly round-shouldered, his face a blend of melancholy and brutish determination. Methodical and shrewdly earnest, he enjoyed great respect from the men and women under him. He threw an expressionless glance at the opened cadaver and then nodded a greeting to Rooney. "New piece of meat?" "The woman from the commissioner's yard," answered Rooney. "Another O.D.?" "No such luck. More work for homicide. She was murdered. I found 3 punctures in the heart." "Ice pick?" "From all indications." Sweat peered at the balding little chief medical examiner, whose benign appearance seemed better suited to a parish priest. "They can't fool you, Doc. What brings the master scourge of evildoers to the forensic palace?" Rooney asked amiably. "You slumming?" "No, an identification by VIPs. I'd like you in on it." "The body's from the blimp," Rooney deduced. Sweat nodded. "Mrs. LeBaron is here to view the remains." "I don't recommend it. What's left of her husband isn't a pretty sight to someone who doesn't see death every day." "I tried to tell her that identification of his effects would satisfy legal requirements, but she persisted. Even brought along an aide from the governor's office to grease the way." "Where are they?" "Waiting in the morgue office." "News media?" "An entire regiment of TV and press reporters running around like crazy people. I've ordered my deputies to keep them confined to the lobby." "Strange how the world works," said Rooney in one of his philosophical moods. "The renowned Raymond LeBaron gets front-page headlines, while this poor baggage gets a column inch next to classified advertising." Then he sighed, removed his lab coat, and threw it over a chair. "Let's get it over with. I've got 2 more post-mortems to conduct this afternoon." As he spoke, a tropical storm passed over, and the sound of thunder rumbled through the walls. Rooney slipped on a sports jacket and straightened his tie. They fell into step, Sweat staring down pensively at the design in the hallway carpet. "Any idea on the cause of LeBaron's death?" asked the sheriff. "Too soon to tell. The lab results were inconclusive. I want to run some more tests. Too many things don't add up. I don't mind admitting this one is a puzzler." "No guesses?" "Nothing I'd put on paper. Problem is the incredibly rapid rate of decomposition. I've seldom seen tissue disintegrate so fast, except maybe once back in 1974. Before Sweat could prod Rooney's recollection, they reached the morgue office and entered. The governor's aide, a slippery type in a 3-piece suit, jumped up. Even before he opened his mouth, Rooney classified him as a jerk. Can we please get the show on the road, Sheriff? Mrs. LeBaron is most uncomfortable and would like to return to her hotel as soon as possible.
I sympathize with her, the sheriff drawled, but I shouldn't have to remind a public servant that there are certain laws we must follow.
And I needn't remind you, the governor expects your department to extend every courtesy to ease her grief. Rooney marveled at Sweat's stony patience. The sheriff simply brushed by the aide as though he were walking past trash on a sidewalk.
This is our chief medical examiner, Dr. Rooney. He will assist with the identification.
Jessie LeBaron didn't look the least bit uncomfortable. She sat in an orange plastic contour chair, poised, cool, head held high. And yet Rooney sensed a fragility that was held together by discipline and nerve. He was an old hand at presiding over corpse identification by relatives. He'd suffered through the ordeal hundreds of times in his career, and instinctively spoke softly and in a gentle manner.
Mrs. LeBaron, I understand what you're going through, and will make this as painless as possible. But first, I wish to make it clear that by simply identifying the effects found on the bodies, you will satisfy the laws set down by the state and county.
Second, any physical characteristics you can recall, such as scars, dental work, bone fractures, or surgical incisions, will be of great help in my own identification. And third, I respectfully beg you not to view the remains. Though facial features are still recognizable, decomposition has done its work. I think you'd be happier remembering Mr. LeBaron as he was in life rather than how he looks in a morgue.
Thank you, Dr. Rooney, said Jessie. I'm grateful for your concern, but I must be certain my husband is truly dead.
Rooney nodded miserably and then gestured at a work table containing several pieces of clothing, wallets, wristwatches, and other personal articles.
You've identified Mr. LeBaron's effects?
Yes, I have sorted through them.
And you're satisfied they belonged to him?
There can be no doubt about the wallet and its contents. The watch was a gift from me on our first anniversary.
Rooney walked over and held it up.
A gold Cartier with matching band and Roman numerals marked in. Am I correct in saying they're diamonds?
Yes, a rare form of black diamond. It was his birthstone.
April, I believe.
She merely nodded.
Besides your husband's personal articles, Mrs. LeBaron, do you recognize anything belonging to Buck Caesar or Joseph Cavilla?
I don't recall the jewelry they wore, but I'm certain the other clothing items are what Buck and Joe were wearing when I last saw them.
Our investigators can find no next of kin of Caesar and Cavilla, said Sweat. It would be most helpful if you can point out which articles of clothing belonged to whom.
For the first time, Jessie LeBaron faltered.
I'm not sure. I think the denim shorts and flowered shirt are Buck's. The other things probably belonged to Joe Cavilla.
She paused.
May we view my husband's body now?
I can't change your mind, Rooney asked in a sympathetic voice.
No, I must insist.
You'd best do what Mrs. LeBaron asks, said the governor's aide, who had yet to introduce himself.
Rooney looked at Sweat and shrugged in resignation. If you will please follow me, the remains are kept in the refrigeration room.
Obediently, everyone trailed him to a thick door with a small window set at eye level and stood in silence as he yanked on a heavy latch. Cold air spilled over the threshold, and Jessie involuntarily shivered as Rooney motioned them inside. A morgue attendant appeared and led the way to one of the square doors along the wall. He swung it open, pulled out a sliding stainless steel table, and stood aside. Rooney took one corner of the sheet covering the corpse and hesitated. This was the only part of his job he hated. The reaction to viewing the dead usually fell into four categories: those who vomited, those who passed out cold, those who broke into hysterics. But it was the last type that intrigued Rooney: the ones who stood as if turned to stone and showed no emotion at all. He would have given a month's salary to know the thoughts circulating through their minds. He lifted the sheet. The governor's aide took one look, made a pathetic groaning sound, and passed out into the arms of the sheriff.
The grisly work of decay was revealed in all its horror. Rooney was astonished by Jessie's response. She stared long and hard at the grotesque thing that lay rotting on the table. She sucked in her breath and her whole body went taut. Then she raised her eyes, not blinking, and spoke in a calm, controlled voice. "That is not my husband."
"Are you positive?" Rooney asked softly.
"Look for yourself," she said in a flat monotone. "The hairline is wrong. So is the bone structure. Raymond had an angular face. This one is more round."
"Decomposition of the flesh distorts facial features," Rooney explained.
"Please study the teeth."
Rooney looked down. "What about them?"
"They have silver fillings."
"I don't follow."
"My husband's fillings were gold."
There was no arguing with her on that score, thought Rooney. A man of Raymond LeBaron's wealth wouldn't have settled for cheap dental work.
"But the watch, the clothing, you identified them as his."
"I don't give a damn what I said," she cried. "This loathsome thing is not Raymond LeBaron."
Rooney was stunned at her fury. He stood dazed and unable to speak as she stormed from the icy room. The sheriff handed the limp aide to the morgue attendant and turned to the coroner.
"What in hell do you make of that?"
Rooney shook his head.
"I don't know.
My guess is she went into shock. Probably fell over the edge and began raving. You know better than I, most people can't accept the death of a loved one. She closed her mind and refused to accept the truth."
"She wasn't raving."
Sweat looked at him.
"What do you call it?"
"Shrewd acting."
"How did you pick that out of the air?"
"The wristwatch," answered Rooney. "One of my staff worked nights as a jeweler to put himself through medical school. He spotted it right off. The expensive Cartier watch Mrs. LeBaron gave her husband on their anniversary is a fake. One of those inexpensive reproductions that are illegally manufactured in Taiwan or Mexico."
"Why would a woman who could write a check for $1 million give her husband a cheap imitation?"
Raymond LeBaron was no slouch when it came to style and taste. He must have recognized it for what it was. Better to ask the question, why did he stoop to wearing it?
"So you think she put on an act and lied about the body ID?"
"My gut reaction is that she prepared herself for what to expect," Rooney replied. "And I'd go so far as to bet my new Mercedes-Benz that genetic tracing, the dental report, and the results of the rubber casts I made from what remained of the fingerprints and sent to the FBI lab will prove she was right." He turned and peered at the corpse. "That isn't Raymond LeBaron lying there on the slab."